Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hello, friends. Today, we are joined by Lauren, and Lauren is sharing her story with us that can be, you know, as Lauren and I were talking before we started recording, sometimes there's this storm and the weight of the world on our shoulders, and it's so difficult. Lauren's storm is pretty intense, from cancer to losing her mom, and then being a cancer survivor and having her child. So I think her story is going to be inspiring and also heart-wrenching, and I am here to hear it, and I'm sure you are too. And I just appreciate it when anyone reaches out and says, hey, I have a unique story to share for the podcast. And so welcome, Lauren. Thank you.
Hi, Jen. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. Wow, cancer at a young age. I can't even imagine. Walk us through what happened with you finding out that you had this huge thing that I can't even imagine.
Right, sure. So my story starts about 5.5 years ago, right before my husband and I were getting married.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah, no pressure or anything. You know, I actually, looking back, I can see how it probably started a lot earlier than that. But this is when I experienced the most intense symptoms. Mm-hmm. We were getting married in August, and we were doing a 5K in April. And I had some really severe abdominal pain the next day. And I just kind of thought it was a fluke. I've always had irregular periods and things like that. So I was kind of like, just assuming, like chalking it up to that.
Yeah.
And I had gone to work the next day and like doubled over in pain and had to make an emergency appointment with my doctor. And several scans later revealed that I had a grapefruit-sized tumor in my uterus.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it was a lot right before I had a surgery that was scheduled at the beginning of May. And so it was a little bit of waiting there at the beginning, just enough to like really psych yourself up and think about the worst and all that stuff.
Did they say the C word that early, or did they say, we'll test and see, or?
It was a test and see game, but it was, given the size of it, my doctor said probably is cancerous.
Wow.
So I had that surgery at the beginning of May, and we got the pathology back a couple of weeks later, and come to find out it was diagnosed as stage 2, which is not an awful place to be for ovarian cancer, is what it was diagnosed as officially. But because of the location of it, I had to have a rather unique incision. So I had an incision that's about 4 inches above my belly button vertically all the way down to my pelvic bone. So it was a big recovery as well.
And can I ask, I know it's rude to ask someone their age, but how old were you going through all of this?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I forgot to mention any of that. Yeah, I was 29.
Oh, you're a baby. And did you have a family history of uterine cancer?
No, not at all.
Oh, my goodness. And then to also have this, the weight of everything, the surgeries, and now this huge scar. And by the way, when is your wedding supposed to be happening?
Right. So the wedding was the beginning of August, and
oh,
all this happened at the beginning of May. Yeah.
Oh.
It was a big ordeal. And I think that was, I mean, I knew that my husband was the person for me. I wouldn't have been marrying him if he wasn't. But I think that whole journey really solidified just what we're about.
And that's a make or break. That is like legit. That is boot camp, and a boot camp you never want to have to go to. But if you do, you find out who your partner is in that situation.
Most definitely. So in that surgery, not only was the tumor removed, but also my right ovary, my omentum, my gallbladder, pretty much anything that wasn't nailed down and that I could live without, they took out, just because if the cancer had spread, they wanted it to be, you know, as contained as possible.
They went really aggressive. And then did they tell you your abilities to get pregnant down the line? Were they trying to do what they could to preserve your fertility?
Yes, that was the conversation, you know, from the beginning. It was definitely something that my husband and I wanted. And really those conversations, in the beginning, it was all about just getting in there and getting it out. And, you know, we're going to do what we can, but at the same time, we want to save your life. And so those, some of the frank fertility conversations came later with my oncologist, and that was difficult to think about. But at the same time, I knew ultimately that, I mean, we've always been open to the idea of starting a family in, you know, a variety of ways, whether it be through, you know, adoption or fostering or whatever. And I think that that whole situation definitely opened us up to be like, well, if this is what is in store for us, then, you know, whatever we need to do to take care of me was the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I was really lucky because the tumor was contained. I actually didn't have to go through chemo or radiation.
But
because of the nature of it and some of the pathology results, they did feel like, to use my oncologist's words, that the cat had gotten out of the bag, if you will. And so for a while I was going every 3 months and then eventually transitioned to every 6 months.
For scans to see if it was showing any signs of the cancer coming back or in other areas of your body. Yeah.
Yes. So I actually had to do like blood work and an exam and then scans as well.
Where were you emotionally at that point? Because you've gone through surgery and you're like, oh, they got it all. I don't have to do chemo. But now it's like you try to go on with your life and then you have to do this testing and then you try to go on with your life. What was that like?
So that was really hard. I mean, at this point I'm a newlywed and one of the happiest, most joyous times of my life. But at the same time, always kind of being brought back to the reality of the disease in my situation and knowing that every appointment, you just hold your breath a little bit. Even now I'm almost 5.5 years removed from it. And I still hold my breath just a little bit, just because you just don't know what the blood test is going to say or what the exam or scan is going to show. And so it's really hard to think about the future too, when all of that is kind of in the back of your mind.
But was the wedding, like, were you able to kind of emotionally put it a little bit aside and have a beautiful wedding and experience? I want to hear that.
Definitely. Yeah. You know, I think that it was one of those moments where we called it the best day ever. Aww. From like coming up to it and since then. And it truly was like, it was just totally covered in joy and celebration. And I had gotten really good reports all, you know, coming back from the surgery and things like that. So, I was able to really focus on that and just like live in the present moment of that huge event and joy too. So,
Oh, okay, good. I needed that.
Yes. It definitely wasn't all. I know that a lot of this will sound like serious, but I don't want it to seem like it was all like doom and gloom and everything. Absolutely not, you know.
No, I know. But it's like, it's just so intense. Whenever we have something that's hanging over us, it's, you know, you've got to, it's not just the physical piece that we go through. It's the mental and emotional piece too. And I feel like that doesn't get talked about often enough because you're like so focused on survival mode and numbers. And it's like, wait, like, there's a daily life that has to happen within all of this as well, and bills to be paid and groceries to buy and a wedding to plan and a life to live while also fighting to survive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
So I began to have some more like checkups with my doctors, obviously following the surgery and you know, moving past the wedding, and you're right, just settling back into like real life. And it was at that point that my gynecologist diagnosed me with PCOS, which, you know, is kind of like, I was asking questions like, which kind of came first? Was the tumor maybe a symptom of the PCOS or what's, you know, and they couldn't really tell me definitively, but that's just kind of something that was always in the back of my mind. I wasn't sure. Leading up to
before the cancer, were your periods regular?
No, I've always had a history of irregular periods. And when I would talk to a doctor about it, it was always kind of like brushed aside and not really seen as like a big deal. Especially for like women of size, like that's kind of seen as a common thing. Mm-hmm. And so, and as a young person, I didn't know enough to ask harder questions or advocate for myself in a more meaningful way.
It's so frustrating because it's almost like you're lucky and you get that one doctor that's willing to invest in you. But so often it's care providers are like, oh, well, you're young, just lose weight. And, you know, you're not trying to get pregnant now. But it's like, no, like the hormonal imbalances impact, you know, impact our weight, and especially PCOS, it makes you gain weight and can be hard. Yeah, there's so much to it that we just look at a person of size and just make assumptions and don't often get people that help that they need. And it's so frustrating. So here you were battling all of this. You had lost an ovary. You're thinking maybe down the road about fertility and diagnosed with PCOS.
Yes. And I, you know, so after following the surgery, I still continue to have those irregular lady days. And my oncologist did not love that. He was really frustrated by that. And so ordered additional like tests and biopsies and things like that, which I appreciated because I mean, I'm grateful that they were being an advocate for me, but at the same time, it just was, it was a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
And, so a diagnosis of endometrial hyperplasia without atypia also came back, which is essentially just a way to say that the lining of my uterus was thicker than it should have been. And so a lot of conversations were had about, well, what does this look like for our future? And a lot of my doctors were really encouraging me to just, go through a healing period, and making sure that I was okay and all of those things, which 100% that's where we were. But at the same time, you can't help, especially as a newlywed, thinking about the future and what that would look like for our family.
And you're in your thirties now, right? Or 30, 31.
Yeah,
and you're getting older.
I turned 30 right before we got married. So my birthday's at the end of July. And we, right as I turned 30, kind of all of this was, coming to a head, if you will.
Yeah.
And, it was super, I will say that the additional diagnoses of PCOS and of endometrial hyperplasia, like it was just super defeating. Like it just felt like, okay, I have made it through this cancer surgery and all these things, but nothing was, I can't seem to catch a break, which seems like I would get frustrated with myself because it seemed selfish. Like I should be grateful.
No, no, you know no way. Like, no, this is your, I feel like we do that so often. Like, well, my friend Susie has it so much worse. And like, no, you don't live in Susie's life. You don't wear her shoes every day. Like this is your life. And that sounds so compounding. And so like, come on universe, like give me an effing break. Like I want to have the ability to move on with my life and start a family and start a life with my husband. And I'm a cancer survivor for goodness sakes. I'm frustrated for you, Lauren.
Thank you, Jen. I appreciate that. You know, and I think especially too, when you have doctors that really are trying to, I feel like doing the best thing for you or give you good advice, but over and over again, I was told, well, you know, if you were done having kids, then we would go ahead and, you know, schedule your hysterectomy and all that, which I think is a total other like kettle of fish. They don't think about all of the, hormonal complications and things like that, that can, you know, cause. But at the same time, like, I was like, well, that's not my story. This is where we're at. I'm making a choice to just monitor right now. And my doctors were respectful of that. But at the same time, you do kind of question yourself. And so it was a really dark period. So that's kind of like the backstory of my health journey. So that's my story, right?
That's quite a story. My goodness.
It is. But at the same time, like with all of that going on, my family went through some really devastating circumstances. So about 8 months after we got married, you know, when I'm in the middle of navigating all these health issues, my father has a stroke.
Oh.
And my mom had had a chronic health condition for several years, and he was her primary caregiver. And so there was a lot of things at play and with that event. And I'm an only child. And so I kind of was gaining some new responsibilities when it came to them.
Do you live close to where your parents are at?
I was about 3 hours away.
So, so that's not just like pop on by and help to buy groceries. That's planning
right.
a huge amount around your life. Wow.
Yes. And so we were lucky. My parents had lived in this one town forever and ever, and they had an amazing community around them. And so I was able to kind of orchestrate, you know, different things with their friends in their life. But at the same time, it was a lot. I always wanted to be really respectful of them. You know, when there's a role reversal between parent and child, it can be very tricky. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure some of your listeners have been through an experience like that as well. And it can be really stressful. I always wanted to be super respectful and not like overstep, but at the same time, like you have to be an advocate for them.
Yeah.
And make sure that their world is staying together as best as it can. But I felt like I had a crazy job at the same time too. And between that and my parents and my health, I was just stretching thinner and thinner. And I sought counseling, which was really
good. Because I was going to say the amount of stress that you must have been under couldn't have been good for your body and your hormone levels either. So I'm so glad you were able to tap into a resource that could help you at least kind of wade through this weight of the water and everything pouring down.
Absolutely. I think that that is something that was a gift for me in this time. But I still felt like the circumstances were what they were and I needed to make some changes because I was just reaching my limit. But that wasn't quite the end of the story. In 2016, so at this point, my husband and I have been married for right at 2 years, about two and a half, two years. Not that that really matters, but it's a lot for a young marriage to go through.
That's a lot in a very short amount of time.
Yes. So my mother was hospitalized for complications from her chronic health condition in, you know, the middle of November. And I had to take a leave from my position. I'm a teacher. I'm a theater director, actually, and which is a ton of fun, but also a really demanding job. And so I had to take a leave at the end of that semester. And you know, despite our best efforts, we lost mom Christmas morning of 2016.
Lauren, I am so sorry for your loss.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it is by far the hardest thing that I have walked through to date. And I know that there's a lot of people that have experienced loss and grief, and it's something that's hard for people to talk about a lot of times. It's also hard to think about how, and until you go through something like that, it's really hard to imagine how it affects every single piece of your life.
Yeah.
And so that was the journey then to walk through after that.
Oh my gosh.
You know, for me, I'm in my mid-30s now. I just turned 35. And people my mom's age, that generation of mothers did not think of themselves, I feel like. They did not practice, you know, the term self-care and all of those things. Yeah. That didn't exist, right? But losing my mom, I made a promise to myself that I was going to choose myself more often. And so it's one of those things that I don't think that it took losing her for me to realize that. But at the same time, I saw that and that was not the path that I wanted.
It made it a priority.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. And so after losing mom, we actually brought my father back to live with us. He was not really in a place where he could be on his own. And he had kind of gone through an additional health issue around the time that she passed away. And so, yeah, my husband has all the stars in his crown that are
But I'm sure that also made things logistically a little easier, but still, wow.
It's a lot. It's a lot to open your home up to an in-law, and that's never lost on me. Both my father and my husband are super chill, like nobody is, you know, crazy or anything like that, but at the same time, it's a lot, you know? I was really appreciative of just the way that we were able to kind of come back from that as a family. My dad actually still shares our home, and it's been a blessing to be able to kind of heal together.
Grieve together.
As an only child, I've always been very protective of my parents and very close to them. And so that's been, it's been helpful to kind of all come up for air after that together.
That's beautiful.
So that is the true backstory. That's my health and that's my family dynamics and everything that I feel plays such a huge part into our health as well. And so as 2017 dawned, I was, in a very dark place.
Yeah.
Just drowning in grief, just with my own health and my family and my loss. And it all just kind of seemed like too much. And I sought counseling again, which was so important.
Good.
And that really led me to believe that some things needed to change. As I said, I was making it a priority to choose myself. And so I resigned from my job, which was really demanding. And I took an elementary position, which has a lot less stress and evening commitment. So I was making a good first step.
Yeah.
And that new job gave me life in so many different ways. Little people are so interesting compared to high school students. And I, not having any kids of my own, that was a big eye opener, but it was also just a ton of fun. But I knew that I needed to follow up and be an advocate for my own health situation if we were going to start a family. Like, I felt like, you know, the last 2 years, we were just kind of like floating and trying to just survive in a lot of ways. And so it needed to be a priority because I was in my early 30s at this point.
Yeah.
So I went to see, you know, I just started kind of with some small things, I think. And also when you're going through something like that, it's hard to really have the energy to investigate, to follow up. And our current medical system, you have to be an advocate for yourself. Like, you can't, like, nobody will do the follow-up for you. You just have, and it's exhausting, I feel like, in a lot of ways.
It's so true.
Yeah. So I had not been on birth control and I had not gotten pregnant. So I decided, and I was kind of fearful about that something else might be wrong. And I just decided in 2018, like at the very beginning of the year, that I was going to quit letting fear of the unknown rule my life and rule our family planning. So I began to take some active steps towards parenthood and just kind of figure out, get a baseline of where I was at. So I had like a panel of blood work done. And I began actively tracking my cycles and my basal body temperature. I began seeing a nutritionist to just kind of help me understand how best to fuel my body. And I began to move a little bit more than I was before. I had gained a lot of weight in that season of caring for my mother and losing my mother and all of that.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah,
but sure. I love that you, I mean, preconception and preconception health is something that we don't talk about very often, but right. It's so incredibly important, preparing your body to grow a life within it.
Yes.
I mean, that's a lot. And so often it's like surprise, or you're trying, but you're not really trying. And when people ask me, like, what is your advice, Jen, around trying to conceive? And my advice to simplify preconception is act like you're already pregnant. Like, figure out nutrition. And I encourage people to connect with a size-friendly nutritionist and move in ways that feel great to your body. And you take all the good vitamins and, hey, start sleeping and all the things that, you know, sound so overwhelming when we're like, you know, being told by a doctor, oh, you're heavy, you have to lose weight, have a nice day, see you in a year. And you're like, wait, what does that even mean? Like, and when we're talking about weight, it just doesn't feel like health. And so when you just break it down of treating your body as if it's already pregnant and all the wonderful things that you need to do for your body that do not revolve around weight loss, it can change so much of your healthy habits and make you feel better emotionally as well as physically.
Well, and too, so many ways that we try to, you know, lose weight, quote unquote, are just counteractive to what it really means to be healthy. And so I think that a lot of times people do themselves a disservice.
Yeah. The radical dieting or starving and
Yeah, by just focusing on that number. So I just wanted to get like a better picture of just where my general health was at. And it was hard at that season too, because my gynecologist suggested my hyperplasia was continuing to be an issue. Mm-hmm. And my gynecologist suggested an IUD, and I was just having a really hard time with that because it was totally counterproductive to what we were trying to do, which was start a family.
And at your age too. I mean, an IUD is not a short term thing.
No, it's not.
Uh-uh.
And he said, well, I think it would be, you know, helpful to try to you know, remove some of the lining. He said, actually, ironically, one thing that might really help you with some of these hyperplasia symptoms would be to get pregnant. And I was like, that's not funny, but I understand, like, I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, like, it was very, very frustrating.
It's like, you're telling me two different things at once and you're not being very helpful. Yeah,
exactly.
That's frustrating.
Exactly. Yes. And so since that was not the option that I went with, he actually put me on a program of metformin to try to help me ovulate, was his reasoning. I am not in any way like very well versed in what all these different, definitely not as well as you or other, you know, medical professionals or anything like that as to what these do. I'm just simply relaying what my doctors told me to do. So there's
No, that worked great for you. But I feel like metformin is like the gold standard for people, but they don't really tell you how it, like, toll that it puts on your stomach and your bathroom drips. And it is an intense medication that's doled out like candy to plus size people.
Yes it is. And so I got the results back from my blood panel and it revealed elevated levels of prolactin. And so I was seeing an endocrinologist at that time as well, just to kind of
figure out
my hormone levels were doing what they were supposed to do. And he ordered a head CT that confirmed the presence of a prolactinoma, which is a small tumor at the base of the pituitary gland that increases your prolactin levels. And we all know, I mean, not all know, but common knowledge is that prolactin elevates in pregnant women and women who are breastfeeding. And so it's very possible that I've had this condition for years, and that my body thought it was pregnant.
It was pregnant. It wasn't getting pregnant. Wow.
Right. So my endo gave me a medicine called cabergoline to help bring those levels down. And this was in July of 2018. And I found out that I was pregnant in September, like the end of September of that year.
Oh, I just got chills everywhere.
Yeah, it was. So
that's what it took. But without meeting with the endocrinologist and digging deeper into what was happening with your hormones, I think back to all those years ago when you were having those irregular periods long before cancer and no one was really willing to figure out what was going on with your body.
Yes. And just, you know, really, I mean, and I have to, you know, I have to wonder like how long all that was going on and how that maybe, you know, played into the development of my cancer and all of those things. I don't know. I don't know that we'll ever know, but it just is what it is. And further proof to me that you have to be your own advocate. You just have to.
Yes.
And it's frustrating and scary, but it is what it is. Now, let me be clear. I'm not advocating for like one magic pill. I don't know for sure that cabergoline was the key to our success, but I strongly suspect
your story. We don't do medical advice on this show. You
Get
know,
it?
Like, yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. This is your story, your specific need, you know, your specific journey, what you went through. But the takeaway is to everybody that, like you said, you have to be your own best advocate. And I find, like, even if you get the perfect, magical, size friendly, wonderful walk-on air care provider, they're not going to call you if you don't show up for your appointment. They're not going to call you if you don't book your next appointment. I mean, even if you find the right fit, they're not out there advocating for you. You have to do this own good self-advocacy, even when it's really scary. Even with every doctor you go to, you are made to feel terrible about yourself. Like, I have tips and I'll put them in the show notes of like how to connect with a size-friendly care provider. But you have to keep fighting. You can't just be like, well, I just keep getting shamed. I'm not going to go to the doctor anymore. That's not the answer. Like, if anything, you could have missed this tumor. Right. I mean, you were in so much pain, you went to the doctor, but there are stories of people of size that ignore until it's well beyond a stage two. So
when does it hurt in the long run? It hurts you. It doesn't hurt them. And so I think that that's the, for sure. Definitely the takeaway. I think that, you know, it was such an amazing thing to finally be pregnant and to see that. And after this, you know, long journey of grief and heartbreak and, you know, scary diagnosis and all of these things, right? To finally be pregnant was such a gift, but I definitely had a lot of anxiety around it.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Kind of just assumed that another horrible thing would happen. And so I remember even like early on not wanting to get too like attached to this, not wanting mm-hmm. to, you know, get too excited or be too hopeful or anything. I was definitely in like kind of survival mode, you know, yeah. of just thinking about something else hard that could happen.
That makes so much sense, though. I mean, I think that sounds totally normal yeah. and a healthy reaction to it of like, wow, this is amazing. When is this going to amazingness disappear? Yeah.
Right. But I was a little bit into it. And I was talking to my best friend just about like my fear and anxiety surrounding my pregnancy. And she really, you know, gave me some great advice. And I kind of like came to this decision that I was just going to kind of take it like one day at a time. Mm-hmm. And just try to enjoy like that present moment.
Yes, I love that. That's incredible advice.
Yeah. And I think I just didn't really know where to turn. And I had kind of quit looking at pregnancy related things or baby related things because, you know, it was kind of too hard to think about if that didn't happen for us and all of that. But my friend put me onto your blog and your Instagram. And so it was kind of at that moment where I kind of fell down the plus mommy rabbit hole a little bit. And just being so excited to have resources that I felt like spoke to me and made me feel like less invisible. And yeah. I loved listening to the birth stories. I loved listening to like the labor and delivery podcast, the nurse that you had on.
Yeah.
And there were some others that were just so empowering to me as a plus size woman to be like, I just felt more educated and empowered when I would go into my appointments with my doctor to be able to ask questions and to be able to know what was going on. It wasn't like it was happening to me, but I was able to be a more like active participants, if that makes
any sense. Absolutely. I'm so touched that those my resources and everyone who shares really supported you. I mean, that's why I do this, and I'm touched right now. Thanks.
Well, it was one of those things that, I mean, thank you is what I would say to that. You know, my body was able to find a way to get pregnant despite everything. And I think that there were a lot of resources in your world that made me believe that it was possible to have a healthy outcome, that mm-hmm. it wouldn't be another bad thing that had happened to me, but it would be a joyful season. And so that's why I claimed. I'm a person of faith, and I didn't believe that this was all an accident. Like yeah. I believed that I was just going to be in this, and I had been brought to it, and I would be brought through it, and we would just have joy in the season. No matter what happened, today would be joyful.
I'm just popping in to say that I've been where you might be today. Plus size, pregnant, and discouraged by all the negative information online about what it is like to have a plus size pregnancy. Over the past 7 years, as a certified childbirth educator, I've supported thousands of plus-size people during pregnancy, and I've poured all the information I've gained into a guide that will support you. Get the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide today at plussizebirth.com. Be sure to enter coupon code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off your guide. You can also get the audiobook version that I recorded just for you. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Now, let's get back to the show.
Now, I entered my pregnancy with high blood pressure. But I went on to have a completely complication-free pregnancy, which I never thought would be possible.
Yeah, because we don't read those stories told those things.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Did your blood pressure stay high throughout your pregnancy?
I doubled up on a medication that I had mm-hmm. taken before, but it wasn't dangerously high ever.
Yeah, and they were keeping an eye on it.
Right, yes. And so, and I was sent to a high-risk physician just for a couple of appointments just to, you know, with the high blood pressure history. Mm-hmm. My doctor thought that it would be best. I was probably also overscheduled for appointments and sonograms, but it didn't really bother me. I kind of liked...
Well, with your health history, I mean, yeah. by that time you'd been poked and prodded in all kinds of ways. Yes. And yeah. a few extra tests can sometimes bring us a lot of peace of mind.
Absolutely. That is so true. I loved getting to just, you know, get a good update that we were both healthy and everything was progressing as it should. So I didn't mind that. And I will say that my care provider was size friendly. This was somebody that I had used for a long time, and I don't think that I would have stayed with him, you know, initially if I had, you know, felt that he wasn't, mm-hmm. but I had never been pregnant with him. And so that was kind of a new phase of our doctor patient relationship. Yeah. And I was really pleased to see how all of that worked out between us. And so that was really good for me. And actually to see everybody in his practice as well. And they were all very respectful, just because you don't really know. It's a common thing when you're about to give birth that you're going to see, because you don't know who you're going to get necessarily.
But it's good to meet everyone, because you never know who's going to walk through that door. And you want to have, least rapport with them. And hopefully that they are size friendly and that they're going to meet you where you're at, too.
Absolutely. I will say that the thing that I was probably the most nervous about was the birth. And I just could not wrap my head around having a vaginal delivery. Couldn't do it. And I had, you know, I had the history of recovery from my cancer surgery. And so I almost felt less nervous about the idea of a C-section than I did of a vaginal delivery. Which
does that make sense in ways? Because, I mean, how your scar was placed and what you went through,
Right. But at the same time, like looking back on it now, that seems silly to me, because, but at the same time, thank you. Yeah, it's affirming to know that I wasn't totally.
You know what it's like to recover from surgery. You have the tools, you've been there. Pushing out a human from your vagina is a whole different experience. And I think regardless of whether or not you're a cancer survivor, like even me, I was like, gung ho, I'm going to have a natural childbirth. But I didn't even think, I didn't even want to think about what position I would be in pushing out this baby. I like to think about coping through labor, not like, oh, and I have to do this thing at the end to get the baby. I think it's totally normal, but especially for someone who has gone through surgery, you know what to expect. It's a whole, it's a thing.
It's a thing, yes. But I was so impressed with my care provider, because he never acted like it would be ludicrous for me to have a vaginal delivery. In fact, he was, I think, more confident in it than I was for a period of time. So I was really grateful for that. My doctor suggested, and I agreed, that I should be induced. I was a little bit, I had listened to the Plus Mommy podcast.
I'm not judging you, Lauren. And your care provider make the decision that is best for you and your baby and your health. That's what matters.
That's right. I know. And at that time, I wanted to make sure that it was my choice, that it wasn't just something that I was being pushed into. And, you know, given my high blood pressure and my health history and just everything, I just wasn't, and just the nerves of being a first time mom, like all of that, I felt good about that decision. And so,
How far along were you when you induced?
About 38 and a half weeks. Okay. So I was very close to full term. And that whole process was really interesting. It was a little bit longer because, you know, when you're medically trying to start, you know, labor, it just takes a little bit of time. We started at 7:30 on a Wednesday morning, on a Tuesday morning. And I had her on Wednesday. I'm forgetting the name of the monitor. What was the wireless monitor?
The Novi?
Maybe it was the Novi. I don't know. I remember.
Monica.
Monica. Yes, Monica. That's right.
Same. Monica Novi. It's the same.
Oh, is it?
It's called the Monica, but the company is Novi.
Okay. So I was very adamant, though, that I not get my, because I did think that I probably wanted to do an epidural, but I didn't want to get it too soon because I didn't want it to, you know, halt my progress and all this. This is your education coming into play in my birth story. So thank you. Aww. So I had the monitor on and I was, you know, walking the halls and everything. And I really think that that helped me progress. I got my epidural around like 11:30 that night, and then had dilated to a 10 the next morning.
When you were in labor, did you ask for the wireless or did they bring it into you?
I asked for it.
Look at you, Lauren. Yeah. I'm loving it. So you advocated for yourself. I mean, you You decided on your terms, yes, I want to be induced. So you made the choice. Awesome. Yes. You got there. You asked for the wireless monitor, knowing as a plus size person, it can be easier and you mm-hmm. be able to be more mobile. And then you advocated to be mobile and up and walking and helping to bring that baby down. I'm proud of you.
That's right. And to me, I think that like going into the labor and delivery, that was probably the part where I was the most anxious, because I had a good relationship with my doctor, but I know that my doctor's not going to be there the whole time. I'm going to mm-hmm. be seeing residents as they give him, you know, checkups on me, and the nurses are going to be really, you know, spending their most time with me. So I was a little bit nervous about if I would experience any bias.
Yeah.
I guess a person of size, I had kind of steeled myself for it. And so there were certain things that I just kind of like took a little bit of a stand on. I hadn't brought my own gown. I had brought a robe, but they gave, you know, there's like two sizes of gowns at a hospital. There's like an itty bitty tiny one. And then a bed sheet. And it was awful. Like I hated it. And I was like, I'm going to take this off. and nobody told me not to, you know? So it's one of those things where I'm a rule follower by nature. And so I'm like a little bit hesitant to do that. But at the same time, I was like, listen, we can thread the monitor cords through my robe. I'm just going to wear my robe and we're going to call this a day. Like, and I don't have a lot of shame anyway. It's like, I didn't care if people like see, you know, me or anything. So
yeah. And they've literally seen it all in the hospital. So it's like, they're going to see more of you than you've even maybe even seen of yourself while giving birth. So it is what it is, but you need to feel comfortable and feel like you can be mobile and not worrying about why is this thing so big? Or why do I feel like I'm like hanging out everywhere? So yeah.
Right. And that was probably my favorite part of my labor, was just being able to be up and mobile and all of that. I felt like I was doing something. My contractions hit pretty fast. They ended up doing a balloon to try to help my cervix open a little bit.
Yeah, the Foley bowl.
In addition to a pill. And so it brought me from like a 2 to a 7 within the time, like span of an hour. And that was a lot. That was really intense. Yeah. And that's when I elected to do the epidural. But I didn't love the epidural. I liked being able to be up and walking and feeling like I was doing something constructive, you know?
Yeah.
But it was it was the right choice for me. And most of that was, I experienced most of the epidural like overnight, because I got it at like 11:30. And by the time I woke up, I was pretty well dilated. I was at like an 8.
Yay.
So yeah, so it was just a couple more hours and I had dilated to a 10, and they started setting up the room and they called my doctor and he's like, oh, it'll, you know, probably take her a little while, whatever. And I started pushing at like 12:30 and she was born at 1.
Wow. Look at you. Yes. That's awesome.
It was awesome. And I will say that, you know, my relationship with my body changed a lot while I was pregnant.
Yeah.
I've never felt more like earth mother power, you know, beautiful, like all of that. I loved being pregnant. I loved it. And it was, and then being able to have that experience and deliver her vaginally and, you know, all that goes into bringing a life into the world. It was one of the most, I mean, if not the most transformative moment of my life. Like, and it's interesting, like the transformative moments of my life are losing my mother and bringing my daughter into the world. And it's so interesting how they're on totally opposite ends of the spectrum, but I felt a real redemption in the birth of my child. And it has been just the best gift. I can't explain it. I love it. It's awesome.
I'm tearing up. That's absolutely beautiful. And the crossover between loss and birth, and in many ways a rebirth of you claiming your body back.
Yeah,
like it's your body, and your body was able to grow this life and birth this life, and that your body is not broken and you're a survivor in so many ways.
Yes, thank you, Jen. Yes, yeah, wow.
Oh, Lauren, you've taken us on a roller coaster, but I like where we're getting off. I mean, it's been such a journey, and I'm so incredibly sorry for your loss and going through cancer and all that you did. I can't imagine the weight of it, but you continue to survive and thrive, really. And now you're a mom too late and have like the best husband in the whole wide world.
So. Yes. And I think that that's, you know, the maybe my motivation to share my story is I feel like I have been in the bottom of the pit and I feel like I have been on top of the mountain and everywhere in between. And I know that there are so many of us that do that same journey and go on those same to those same places, and we don't talk about it and we don't, you know, bring those hard things to the light. And so any part of what I've been through that could be encouraging or motivating for somebody else to be an advocate for themselves, get themselves checked out, you know, go on their own journey of wellness, it would do me so much good to know that a small part of my story could perhaps help somebody else.
I know that it will. I know that it will. I know that there are people listening right now who feel incredibly moved by your story, Lauren. So thank you. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks, Jen. It's been my absolute pleasure.
Well, take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye.